Hello, this is Daniel Jowkett.
And this is Manton Reese.
And this is Core Intuition, Thinking Faster and Looser.
All right, Daniel. Well, it's a week after WWDC 2014. And, you know, I feel like I've been living in this dreamland for a week, playing with Swift, playing with CloudKit, playing with new Xcode, all sorts of stuff, watching session videos. And now a week later, kind of not sure where to go next, because I could keep watching session videos and keep learning Swift, or I could get back to the day-to-day. I actually need to ship apps.
Oh,
the current version of the OS.
Oh, that's overrated, Manton.
Right.
Shipping software. But yeah, it is always a conundrum. And you've had a little more time to sort of revel in the information at home, because you went home on Thursday, right? And it's not that different, but I came home on Friday night, and then, you know, weekends, not typically as indulgent as the weekdays as far as that kind of stuff goes.
I have a full 24-hour head start on you. Right. That's going to make all the difference.
Well, yesterday, we're recording this on Tuesday after WWDC week, and yesterday I indulged in a little bit of Swift on the flight home, and I'm still really just dipping my toes in the water, but I used it long enough to discover a couple bugs. And so I wanted to, you know, get into that and report those ASAP. I thought this was kind of interesting, because one of the bugs I ran into was like, are you serious? Like, you can't do that. I was like, it choked on weak instance variables in my Objective-C headers.
Okay.
And that made me realize just how few, I mean, we knew it. We've been hearing it all week that not very many people at Apple knew about this. But that means to me, you know, so few people knew about it that it hasn't been tested on a lot of big source bases, right? And when I mean tested, obviously there's not a lot of big Swift source bases, but there's a feature of Swift which facilitates calling Objective-C code Objective-C implementations from Swift. And the way it works is you pass what's called a bridging header, and it just imports all of the headers you want Swift to be able to access with its, you know, native class, you know, syntax.
Right.
And it totally failed when I tried to import all of my frameworks. You know, I have like this framework called RS Foundation and RS App Kit. And I thought, well, if I'm going to try to make a Swift class, why don't I just have access to everything I already have? Mm-hmm. And I didn't like that. So, but it was gratifying. I got to report the bug. I found a bug in Playgrounds, reported that. It's nice. I like this time of, in a sense, it's cool because Swift, because it was exposed to so few people at Apple, like, we're on the same page with almost everybody at Apple, which is not true for everything that they announced, of course.
Yeah, and it's fun to, I mean, you know, you and I guess, came to Mac OS X from classic Mac, not Next Step. And so in some ways it sounds weird because we have a lot of Objective-C experience now. But we were kind of late to the Objective-C party, right? Did C++, Pascal, whatever, old toolbox, C APIs, whatever before that. And so, but that was ages ago, right? That was long before iOS. So it feels like we have a lot of Objective-C experience. And now, you know, everyone's starting from the same page now.
Right.
No one has a bunch of Swift experience. We're all kind of learning this thing. I don't know. It's fun, but again, I just don't know. Brent had a good post about, he's going to dive right in because this is the time to make an impact on the language, which is kind of what you were saying. You found a bug, you reported it, they're going to fix it. And it's a nice time to make sure your stuff works well. But at the same time, I don't know. I feel like I can get too distracted here and get like just way off into the weeds. On the other hand though, like you can build right now, correct me if I'm wrong, you could build a Mac app and ship it with Swift today, not counting the Mac App Store, right? Because they're not going to let you submit to the Mac App Store or the iOS App Store until Xcode is GM. But if you just want to build a Mac app that combines Swift and Objective-C and ship it to a friend or distribute it directly, you could do that today, right? There's nothing to stop
you from doing that. You could do that physically, but I believe that would probably be a violation of the NDA. So the very lax NDA that we have been afforded this year does forbid distribution of the materials that we've been given early access to.
Okay.
So I would have to guess that that's either a violation of the NDA or a violation of the license that we have.
And it also may be slightly dangerous because although it will probably work fine, they have said they're going to change the language. They may change, I don't know. Is it going to be totally binary compatible? Who knows? So not a great idea, but I'm trying to find this middle ground of like, how much do I live in the future and how much do I work on the stuff that I needed to work on before the keynote anyway? And I thought maybe I could kind of start throwing some Swift in there and live half, you know, one step in the future, but maybe not.
Yeah. You know, I think you could, if it was a situation where it was compiling down to strictly code, it would be a little bit less risky, but the way it works, if you haven't seen this already, is it actually drops a bunch of Swift support libraries into your app bundle. So, and you end up with, I think this is how they're facilitating backward compatibility. You know, they do depend on some kind of Swift language, you know, I don't know, runtime, I don't know what it is, but there's stuff that has to, I guess it's probably, you know what it is? It's probably like the Swift standard, and I know this from seeing the libraries now, they had names like standard library or something like that. So it's kind of like if you were like deploying a C app on a system that had never seen C before, you would have to include standard C lib and strings libraries and all this other junk. And so the approach right now anyway is they're bundling that all into the app, even if you add one Swift class. So it's interesting though. It is just cool that you know, that you can do the mix and match. Like, that makes it a little intriguing to when we are able to ship apps that, you know, that use Swift. Maybe I will do a few classes in Swift, but I agree with you. There's sort of a rift between the pragmatism of wanting to just get back to work on everything that we've used up to this time. And there's always this rift. Remember, because we've talked about this before, you and I sort of neglecting to adopt technology sometimes. And often that's because we're supporting some older system. But then we find ourselves 4 or 5 years later being like, oh, yeah, auto layout. I should really do that someday.
Yeah.
So there's an element of I just got to keep shipping software so I can keep my, you know, keep my livelihood. And then there's also the other side of that, which is, geez, if I just dig all into this new stuff, then I'm going to be like at the top of the pack when it becomes a real serious and everybody's using it technology.
Right. And there's certainly, I can't even think of another opportunity that's come around in the last few years, especially on iOS, where you could literally ship something on iOS 8 day one that was not possible at all before. Not just like, hey, the UI is fancier or it looks different, or, I mean, totally brand new apps and extensions. And being there right away, like spending the next 2 months only working on that new stuff and shipping right away, is also really compelling.
Yes, absolutely. It's always like, Apple always drops some stuff at WWDC where you're like, if I can just put everything aside and work for a few months on this, I'll have this feature in my app or a whole new standalone app that will shine on the new platform and will be, you know, hopefully be featured in the App Store, all this stuff. You know, like when they announced Core Animation, if you had just like dropped everything and made something really slick with Core Animation in your app, you'd probably get featured. And I'm not very good at that, but I do wonder sometimes, not only what am I losing as far as like accelerating my own development progress, and what am I losing as far as like, you know, indoctrinating a sense of gratitude from Apple?
Right. And I think now especially, this is really tempting to just go in on the new stuff and build something that's iOS 8 only, because not only does Apple love it when you adopt their technologies and they want to feature you, I think the opportunities to be featured are about to go through the roof. Because of the way the App Store is evolving and the way they're going to have, you know, a whole new tab, you know, Explore, showing other categories and improving search. And it's going to be easier, hopefully, for your app to get noticed if Apple notices it than before. A lot of developers complain that, yeah, I was kind of half featured, but sales went up a little bit, but then I was still buried. And I think that's going to get better.
Yeah. Well, I hope so. And I was thinking about this from last week. We talked about We talked about the new App Store changes and will it benefit developers. And I was saying, I hope they make more money. And it didn't occur to me until afterwards, or maybe shortly while I was saying it. But I think that's all only iOS's store, right? I mean, yeah. Do we have anything to hope for on the Mac? Is there going to be a... I mean, it would make sense. They would try to achieve some kind of parity there with functionality, but...
Yeah, this sounded like all... In terms of like being able to find new apps and improving search, it sounded like it was all iOS 8. But the iTunes Connect improvements, I would expect, would apply to the Mac App Store as well.
Yeah, that's good. So, and you know, the other thing is we don't suffer nearly as badly on the Mac as iOS developers because there's simply not as much stuff and there's not nearly as much scam stuff. Mm-hmm. So, like, I've been hanging out, you know, in social networking's top 10 for like 3 years. And it's partly because there's not that much competition, but it's partly because I'm a $40 app in a category that has Twitter apps.
Right.
So that's the top grossing, rather the top 10 grossing.
Yeah.
But you know, that's something that I don't think would be easy to do on iOS, even with the same kind of situation, because there's so much stuff and there's so much of a race among developers to try to, you know, make it to the top of the stack.
Yeah. So where are you going to go next? You know, you're probably watching videos still and kind of, you know, I'm still learning things. I watched a video yesterday. It was like brand new API I'd never heard of before. So I'm still uncovering new stuff that's going to impact what I do. But like, where do you think you're going to go next? Are you going to go back to reality and ship an app that works on 10.8 and up? Or are you going to jump in and say, you know, Mars Edit, whatever?
Yeah.
You know, 10.10 only, or
I'm starting to get really I don't want to say reckless. I'm starting to think a little faster and looser about what I do or don't need to support. And you know, just to say, like, I have considered even that, like, maybe the next Mars Edit will be 10.10 and up, because I really think that, especially with this pace that Apple's established over the past few years, there's going to be 10.11 pretty soon, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, the way this works, you blink your eyes and the year is gone. And I don't know, that's you know, it's not like I'm making millions of dollars off of my apps, so it's not like, you know, what if I lose 10% or something? I don't know, won't be hundreds of thousands of dollars or anything. I guess I sort of feel like when you're at a smaller scale like us, yes, on the one hand, you want to try to eke out every market corner that you can. And that's, I think, the argument some people make for supporting, you know, older systems generously. But then you got to weigh that against all of that flexibility and like ease of taking advantage of new technologies. You know, if you're 10.10 only, there's not a single thing in the world on the day you launch that that you can't do because of backward system support.
Yep.
And that's pretty appealing.
And there's also, I mean, the UI change in 10.10 is not as drastic as iOS 7 was, but it's still there in a more significant way than in previous versions of macOS 10. So there's a little bit of a cost to just supporting 10.9 and 10.10,
yep.
I think.
Yeah, I think
you're
right.
Going to have a little, you know, if I'm on 10.10, then the toolbar is completely different. You're going to have a little bit of that.
Yep, you're going to look dated on 10.9 or on 10.10, or you're going to look, I don't know, you're going to have to do a bunch of custom UI, right, on 10.9 if you want to try to have some kind of appearance parity.
Yeah, and it might not be major, but it'll be work.
Yeah.
And you'll have to support that. And it'll be work for a, you know, dwindling percentage of users.
That's an interesting problem. You know, it's actually, I mean, I say problem because it's a little bit daunting, right? Here I am, I've been working on my app, my next update to my app for years. I still got plenty to do, lots of dreams and ambitions for this app. And then it's like, oh yeah, and I should also totally overhaul the UI.
Just don't rewrite it in Swift completely.
Yeah, right. Okay. Gotta keep one step ahead, right? All right. Well, folks, we are very happy to have back as sponsors of the show this week our friends from Smile, and they want us to tell you more about PDF Pen for iPad. PDF Pen for iPad lets you edit PDFs anywhere you are. And now, with new Transporter integration, you can access PDFs on your own private secure cloud. Sign a contract, fix a typo, correct a price list, or fill out a form while you're on the go. Take PDF documents with you, add notes, highlighting, and other markup during your downtime. You can sync PDFs with PDF Pen for OS X using iCloud or Dropbox. Grab and save PDFs using Dropbox, Evernote, Google Drive, Box, and as I mentioned, now Transporter. PDF Pen for iPad is available on the App Store, and Transporter is available from filetransporter.com. And of course, Smile Software has a special landing page for Core Intuition listeners at smilesoftware.com/coreint.
Yeah, thanks so much, Smile, for sponsoring the podcast again. PDF Pen is one of those great apps that you should just have around. You might not need it every day, but when you need it, you know, you need to sign a document or something on your iPad and send it off to somebody, or view a file and kind of mark it up or make changes to it. It's a great app to have around if you ever need to do anything with PDFs. You know, as Daniel said, there's a long list of services that it supports, and I was always impressed with that. You know, you go and you say export or share, and you get this long list of stuff. And I love that they kind of erred on the side of supporting everything. So it's not just Dropbox, it's a bunch of stuff, including the new Transporter. So it prompts for your credentials. And if you have a Transporter or a couple of them, you can sync with that and open files from that. It's a great app. I hope listeners can check it out.
Yeah, thanks so much, Smile. And, you know, this week we happen to be talking about Smile during a week when, if you happen to hear this episode by June 15th, you can also check out a cool promotion they're doing that benefits you with a discount and also benefits a charity of your choice. So a lot of folks recognize the value of Smile's software, and they might know of a charity or a nonprofit that would also benefit from having something like PDF Pen or Text Expander, their other great products. So they're running this promotion. You can learn more about it at smilesoftware.com/nonprofit.
Great. Thanks again to Smile for sponsoring the podcast. And that's smilesoftware.com/coreint.
So, Manton, one of the things I'm still reeling from, obviously I'm reeling in many ways as my mind tries to get back to how to work, but one of the things I'm still reeling from the week at WWDC and Apple's keynote and the general change of tone is the fact that apparently Apple's NDA, you know, I guess I could go look at it as I'm, you know, included in it, but apparently they changed it in a subtle way so that they explicitly exculpate people from being, you know, in the wrong for this whole class of things. Like, in summary, you're allowed to talk about all the stuff you learn at WWDC, and you're allowed to talk about it with details. You know, they sent like people with press badges to the whole week and gave them permission to write about it. And that's just, it's one of those things, you know, speaking of like thinking we knew Apple and what they would or wouldn't do. That's one where we've just always taken it for granted that there's this kind of silly NDA that seems to cover everything that anybody can get access to just by going and joining the ADC, right? But this year, apparently, if I understand it correctly, you can do just about anything with your knowledge from WWDC short of writing a review of one of the products because they're not out yet, right? They're not completed.
Right.
Literally copying materials from the conference, like your copy of pre-release Yosemite or something, literally copying that to somebody. And there's one other thing I can't remember now, but that's...
Well, you mentioned I shouldn't ship a Mac app. So it's kind of
right.
Same thing.
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing. You're basically able to talk about the facts, but you're not able to distribute the materials. And there's a lot to talk about when it comes to the facts, right? I mean, as I've taken that to mean, for instance, I can say if I learned some feature about Yosemite from watching a WWDC video, I used to always have this careful filter on, like, am I violating an NDA now or not? And
yeah,
frankly, it's hard because the information becomes very widespread anyway. And so it really is more of just a nuisance to people that they have to try to remain technically in compliance. But one of the things I think is different this year, because of this is it seems like people are a lot more open to talking about the new features on Twitter, for example, although you wouldn't know that, right? But probably on app.net as well. but then also sites like Stack Overflow, where in the past, all technical Q&A about a pre-release product from Apple had to be like sequestered in the Apple dev forums. And yep. This year, already, if you go to Stack Overflow and you search on, say, Swift, which is supposed to be like a super secret WWDC, you know, in the past years, if they came out with something like Swift, all of the details of it that were not mentioned in the keynote would be under the NDA. And now we got questions. I just look at the first page of responses. Everyone's asking these questions. How do I do the equivalent of at selector in Swift? How do I use AF networking with Swift? How do you use delegates? You know, all this stuff that's like the kind of stuff that you start to wonder and question if you dig into a new language. And previously you would have had to go to the dev forums where, frankly, although you get the benefit of Apple's own employees sometimes answering, the system is just broken compared to the elegance of how Stack Overflow handles it.
Yeah, this is such a nice change because I hated you go to Stack Overflow before, someone asks a question, and then very quickly someone else, not an Apple employee, just some developer would come and say, that's under the NDA, I'm closing this, you can't talk about. And I hate that, like, as a community, some people thought it was their job to police other developers. And like, that's Apple's job. Like, I hated that people would come in and shut discussions down. Like, let Apple deal with that. And thankfully, the way Apple's dealing with that is admitting finally that it's ridiculous. Like, in the keynote, Tim Cook said there were 9 million registered developers, right? And I couldn't believe that number. And I was talking to some other friends about it, and they said, no, that's not right. But I went back and checked. No, that's actually correct. 9 million. And Lee, I'm no lawyer, but like, it doesn't make any sense to enforce this when 9 million people have access to it. It's just crazy. And I'd like to believe that actually they were preparing that slide in keynote and they're like, yeah, you know, that NDA is probably pointless now.
Yeah.
Let's actually get rid of it. And so this is a really nice change. And if nothing else, it means that I don't have to blog and complain about the NDA anymore. Like, if you go back,
right,
you know, we all wrote something, all of us. Some people were scared to write things, but a lot of us wrote negative stuff about this. And now Apple doesn't have to worry about all the great announcements they made being kind of watered down or balanced against negative posts about things like the NDA. We can focus on the actual technology and not the politics.
Right. You know, I always thought that it must be something like, because so many people knew the facts, I always thought it must just be some kind of weird technical trap for Apple's competitors. Like, if you were in the Google Maps team and you felt that Apple Maps was a credible threat, then maybe in the past with an NDA, or maybe even to this day, I don't know, but you could imagine scenarios where like your Google manager would say, you are not allowed to go look at Apple's pre-release Maps stuff, because if you do, then they will, you know, I don't know, accuse us of copying them out, you know, before they get out of the gate or something. I don't know what the technicalities are, but I can imagine kind of in the same way that like there are, clean room implementations of things that are kind of clones of other stuff, but you keep your eyes off of the original material to justify that your thing is new and original. I always wondered if there was something like that with NDAs, but maybe it was just a bunch of bogusness.
Who knows? I mean, honestly, the everything they release is a public beta, really. It's not a top secret like SDK download that no one has access to. It's basically a public beta. Anyone who wants to can have access to it. So I don't think, again, this is not legal advice, but anyone, even if they're a competitor, should be able to look at the stuff once it's announced and distributed to 9 million people.
Yeah, and it's another move that they made within the past few months that goes right in line with this is that they did literally expand their beta testing program to include, I think, anybody who wants to use the software. So this summer, we're going to have a lot of people running Yosemite. And it's going to be interesting. You know, no NDA, bunch of average Janes and Joes running running this new system. And here's the genius of it is I think it's just going to have everybody talking about Apple stuff all summer when it's kind of like in the past, they'd have this big fanfare on WWDC day or week. And then there was some like space for other companies to come in and talk about something because everyone was supposed to shut up about it for the summer.
Right.
But this year, everyone's like, oh, we're allowed to talk about Apple's new programming language and Apple's new extensions and Apple's new call from a phone from your Mac and this, that, and the other thing and Apple's continuity. And everyone else is like, by the way, Android or whatever they say, you know? So it's going to be interesting to see how much Apple manages to continue sort of keeping a buzz going because of this change of attitude.
Right, and I was logging into Amazon the other day, and they had a little banner that said some announcement is coming, right? Some new tablet or whatever. And I don't remember the date. It's probably this week or next week. But we are still uncovering so much about the announcements from WWDC. I can definitely see that, you know, a lot of new stuff being kind of just not in the, not as much attention as it would otherwise.
We better be careful here, Manton, or we'll go out and turn this into a 2-hour podcast. But just off the top, just as an aside, how do, you know, people have accused Apple of like just copying Android stuff from 4 years ago, and that's all this iOS 8 is, right? And I don't think that that's an accurate representation, but you know, some people claim that that's the case, and maybe on some really abstract technical level, that's true. But from a marketing point of view, how does Android come back to this, to Apple's big? I mean, a lot of the things that they would ding Apple about are sort of gone, and they don't have. What do they announce that like gives them that new fancy feeling?
Yeah, I have no idea. I also think that with the continuity, you mentioned this, and you were talking about this on the Debug podcast last week too. That's stuff that only Apple can do. I mean, Apple says that line all the time, only Apple can combine right. blah, blah, blah. But in this case, it's totally true. I mean, only Apple has the controls, you know, ships a new version of the macOS and iOS basically at the same time and can do these crazy integration features. Like the stuff they're doing, you know, SMS messages showing up on your Mac, taking phone calls from your Mac, that stuff would be very difficult for anyone else to do.
Yeah, and you're right, because they have...
I guess Microsoft
could. Well, they could, but they don't have an existing installed base of mobile users. And Apple has this ginormous installed base of mobile users, and then they can use that to juice the attractiveness of the Mac, which is great for me, great for you, great for lots of people. But when you say that, it calls to mind in retrospect how brilliant it would have been for Microsoft to make like the centerpiece features of their Windows phones to do something like this, right? Because that's where their huge advantage is. Actually, the vast majority of people have Windows desktops still. So in a sort of world where Apple's running away with the mobile popularity that Microsoft maybe wished it had, wouldn't it have been clever of them to say, well, you can't do this with, you know, an iPhone?
It's almost like Microsoft spent so much time with this idea that there should be one OS on both platforms that they totally missed the boat on some of this integration stuff that Apple is now doing.
Yeah, and I'm so happy that Apple, that's the other thing, this continuity and the integration is just such a forecast that they are not planning. You know, never say never, but it doesn't seem like they're planning now to have much unification, if any, of the OSs, you know, beyond what's pragmatic. It's pragmatic to have the libraries and frameworks that make sense on both platforms unified. But, you know, UI kit for Mac or, app kit for iOS, I don't think that's happening.
That's a definite no.
That's something that zero people are asking for, right? Well, maybe me. I mean, I could ship Mars Edit for iOS tomorrow.
It's so funny because it wasn't long ago before the iPad was released, and it wasn't that long ago when you and I were talking about what the tablet was going to look like. And I was like, I hope it runs Mac OS.
Yeah, you were jazzed about it. You're like,
because I was like, I want to use a stylus and I want to be able to run, you know, Photoshop or whatever. That seems crazy now, but that wasn't very long ago that seemed like it was had a 50-50 chance of happening.
You know what, Manton? Sometimes we just got to admit that there are visionaries in this world, and you know, probably we're all visionaries about something, and we're just lucky if we happen to notice that at the time that we're actually being visionary. But oftentimes these things happen, and I'm just like, you know, got to give some credit to these people who are like, they made the call, and they made the right call. A lot of the stuff Apple's been doing the last several years, it's like they made the right call.
Yeah.
And it would have been just as easy for me to, as a sort of like narrow-minded, sometimes like self-righteous, you know, I don't think I was taking the argument you were about the Mac, like how it should be a Mac tablet, but I could make an argument like that, or I could get on board with an argument like that. And it takes these people, I think, who are able to sort of see what the world would look like when you take away all those old allegiances, right? And that's one of the things, you know, I'm grateful that Apple's doing. I'm grateful that Apple had the vision to say, you know what, let's not just make Objective-C a little bit better every year. Let's make an all-new language and totally destroy, totally penalize Objective-C users. No, just, you know, there's stuff like that where I don't see it coming. And when I don't see it coming, and I think in retrospect, it was a brilliant idea, that's when I really take my hat off to people who are making those kind of decisions.
Yeah, Apple understands that to keep being successful, they can't be afraid to take risks. And they really mean it. Have you seen that stupid Domino's pizza commercial about the making mistakes?
No.
They play this over and over again when some show I was watching, I don't know. But it's like with a straight face, they're like, we can't afford to, you know, we can't be afraid to try some crazy pizza and fail. And it comes off laughable to me, because they're being way too serious about this pizza. But with Apple, it's totally true. They know they have to risk some things to make kind of the, you know, jump forward. And so far, with everything we saw last week, every kind of risk they took has been very well received.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. People have said a lot of things about this keynote, how it's like the most exciting in years, how it's the change in the temperature of Apple's treatment of developers, et cetera, et cetera. But I think the one superlative that you would be hard pressed to, okay, maybe it may be the single keynote of all time from Apple that doesn't really stir up any ill will, right? I mean, some people might be like, I wish they did this or that, but I don't think anybody's like, well, you know, there's got to be someone, but as a rule, there's not a lot of people going like, no, 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 it's a terrible idea to have extensibility. It's a terrible right. idea to have a new programming language. It's a terrible idea to be able to make phone calls from your Mac. It's a terrible idea, you know, to have totally improved view controllers on the Mac.
Right.
Why do they have to make this so much better, you know?
Right. And even things that could be like CloudKit, I think, is a great example. I think CloudKit is maybe the biggest thing from last week, next to Swift. And we can argue about what the greatest thing was, and that's a great problem to have, because there were several things that could be the greatest thing. But I think CloudKit might be up there, because it's really well designed. It doesn't try to be too fancy like some of their previous sync stuff. And I've played with it, and it works as advertised from what I can tell. But even that, like when you look closely, you can say, well, there's things to nitpick. Like you still can't access it from the web, so that makes cross-platform and web apps difficult. There were some limitations with how you want to sync things. There's some file storage limits that will just rule it out for a lot of apps. But it's so much better and so well thought out for what it does compared to everything else iCloud that it's hard to argue with it or complain about it, because it's a big step forward.
Right. And there was nothing that was like framed as a really sweet solution, you know?
Exactly.
Everything was actually, and part of this is just simply that not only was so much of the stuff they announced in the right direction, but there was that icing on top, which is almost all of it was a step further in the right direction that anybody expected Apple to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. It's a good week.
So here's to the crazy ones, Manton, the people who like crappy pizza in little boxes, the round pizzas in the square holes, Domino's.
All right. Well, good talking to you this week. Thanks, everyone, for listening. You know, there's still a lot to think and talk about and learn from the conference. Like I said, I'm still discovering new little APIs. You know, they like to throw out the number like 4,000 new APIs. And what does that actually mean? Well, who knows exactly what it means, but there's a lot of new stuff. And it's going to be really fun over the next couple months to hopefully ship some real apps, but also play with the new stuff.
Yeah, you know what it means? 4,000 APIs means that none of us can actually succeed with any of this. But we're going to have fun trying. So, Manton, it's great catching up with you again, and I will talk to you again next week.
All right, bud.